main attraction. We'll send you that good old Southern barbecue. We'll be singing high and low. We'll be rocking to and fro with a hidey, hidey ho while we're ripping at the barbecue.
It is summertime in Wisconsin, and that makes it the perfect time to be grilling out and eating your food fresh and from the garden. And there's so much fantastic food coming up in the garden, and we'll spend the hour talking about how to use it for beautiful and delicious summer food. From grilling to chilling, we'll give you some fresh ideas and hopefully hear some of your ideas and favorite recipes as well. I'm Veronica Rickert with you today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Ian Knauer is back with us this hour. He's a contributor and former test kitchen cook at Gourmet Magazine, and he blogs at BigCityCountryBoy.com and recently published a cookbook called The Farm. Well, what do you look forward to cooking in the summer? What are your favorite summertime meals? On the grill, maybe. Tell us about what your favorite grilling food is, and do you like to keep it simple in summer, or do you get creative? And how about when the temperature goes way up? What is it you're eating then? Our number is 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234, or send your email to talk@wpr.org. And you can also check in on our Facebook page at The Veronica Rickert Show. And Ian Knauer, it's great to have you back.
It's so great to be back. Thanks for having me.
So here we are in the thick of summer. Last time we talked to you, I think it was still a little bit nippy here in Wisconsin, but right now we're heading into the big part of the growing season, a bit of a drought too, but we are starting to see that produce. What is it that you're cooking right now? What's coming up in your garden?
Well, it's been awfully hot. So all the cooking that I've been doing has been strictly outside cooking or non-cooking cooking, like blending up cold soups, because I don't want to turn my oven on and just crank the AC.
Yeah.
But actually, this week, I'm staring at my fingernails. I have dirt under them because I was weeding my garden all day yesterday. And zucchini are finally here. It's been quite dry. My garden's in Pennsylvania. It's been quite dry there, too. So they're a little smaller than they might be if we had had the right amount of rain, but they're still great, really, really delicious.
So what are you cooking with zucchini? I mean, they're one of those versatile vegetables. They come up in droves, so give us some ideas.
One of my favorite things to do with zucchini, actually, I have a couple favorite things that I love to do with zucchini. One is to slice them paper thin and put them on pizza with just some Parmesan cheese and some really good olive oil and some basil. And, you know, I mentioned that I don't want to turn my oven on, but grilled pizza is a really fun way to make pizza. You put your pizza dough on a cookie sheet. And then you put your toppings on it and you slide it right onto the grill. You need a really hot grill so that the dough sets right away. But zucchini pizza is one of my summer favorites.
Now,
another thing that I'd love to do with zucchini is...
Can we stop and talk about the pizza for a second, though? Because I have been dying to try grilled pizza. I have friends that can make it. And it is always, to me, so intimidating because I'm afraid that I'm going to have this beautiful pizza on my cookie sheet and I'm going to try to transfer it to the grill and it's going to fall all over the place. How do you accomplish the slide?
Here's the secret, and it's cornmeal. You want to get a fair amount of cornmeal on your sheet before you put the dough on there. And that's just going to help it slide right off. They sort of do the same thing in a pizza shop with semolina flour. So they put the semolina flour on their pizza peel, and then they put the dough on there, and then it just helps it, you know, just slide right into the oven. So the cornmeal is really the secret, number one, to get it off the cookie sheet onto the grill. And secondly, you want a hot grill. Because if your grill is not hot enough, the dough won't set and it'll drip down into the fire.
That sounds bad.
You know, before it sets. Right, exactly. So the two secrets are the cornmeal on the cookie sheet and have your grill high.
So you don't oil the cookie sheet. It's just the cornmeal.
Just the cornmeal. If you oil it, you're going to get some stickage in some places and not in other places, and you end up with sort of a goopy mess. I think that the dry slide is definitely the way to go when you're grilling pizza.
Okay, great. Well, I'm going to try it. I've resolved. I'm going to try it. I'm feeling
it
a little brave now. We'll see how it goes. So you've got your zucchini pizza. What else do you do with zucchini?
Okay, so two more things that I've been doing a lot with zucchini. Number one, I've been blending it up in... sort of like a gazpacho, but without tomatoes. So I call it green spacho. So I've got zucchini in there and some herbs and green bell pepper, a little bit of shallot. And then just like you make gazpacho, as that's blending, I pour some olive oil into the blender. And that gives it a really nice viscosity and a really great texture. And you don't have to turn your oven on. So it's a nice chilled soup. It's really delicious. It's really fresh. It looks like chlorophyll, so you feel like you're eating something really healthy, and you are. And so that's another thing that I love to do with zucchini. And lastly,
yeah, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I like to put cilantro in there and just a little bit of mint.
Oh.
Not enough to make it minty, but just so it keeps it fresh and you know, there's a little bit of intrigue there.
Oh, that sounds good. Okay, so what's your number three?
Okay, number three is this one's actually in my cookbook. This is a cocoa zucchini cake. And if you think about like something like carrot cake, the carrots add a lot of moisture to the cake. Now, you also taste carrot in carrot cake. But with zucchini is sort of a neutral flavor. It's mostly water. And so when I shred it and add it to the cake batter, the cocoa totally takes over flavor-wise. But this cake is so moist. I mean, it's hard to believe unless you know the fact that, you know, the zucchini's in there adding all that moisture.
I think you've got a picture of that one in the cookbook, don't you?
It is. Yeah, there is a picture.
And it looks amazing.
It's definitely a crowd pleaser. Everybody loves that one.
Well, I tried, and I blame you for this because I was so hot that day. It was 102 in Madison, and it was the 4th of July, actually. So it was this obscenely hot day. And I made it was with potatoes and corn and
The potato corn
basil
salad.
Right, potato corn salad, which was amazingly tasty. I mean, it was the big hit, actually, of our meal that day. But I had to boil the corn, and it was so hot. I don't know if I'll do it indoors in a heat wave like that again, but it was really good. So why don't you tell us about that one?
Well, that's a really fun recipe. It's sort of my take on a German potato salad. There's no mayonnaise in it. There's a little bit of sort of a vinegary dressing that gets drizzled over everything. But the corn in there adds a really interesting sort of sweetness and crunch and makes it feel very summery. We eat potato salad year-round in my family. But this potato salad, because of the corn, because of the herbs, there's basil in there, it feels really great when you eat it in the summer. So I love that recipe too. And actually, the trick to boiling a little less, obviously you need to cook your potatoes and you need to cook your corn, but I do it in one pot. So I put the potatoes and the corn in one pot, bring it up to a boil, and then only after a minute or two I take the corn out, and then the potatoes continue to cook. So you only have one pot on the stove instead of two.
I did do that.
Good.
Again, 102 degrees.
Right, yeah. It's just been crazy hot.
Yeah, it has been.
Well, here's another great way to cook corn without having to turn your oven on or boil a pot of water. I take the corn cobs and I keep them in the husk and I put them directly on the grill. And what happens is they steam in their own juices. They pick up some of the flavor of the husk. I mean, it's not overwhelming, but it's nice and subtle. And in the end, you just take them straight off the grill, put them straight on a serving platter, and make everybody peel their own corn. So you don't even have to do the work of husking. You just throw it right on the grill the way it is.
That's a nice one. I like that idea, especially. So you're grilling out more. You're not doing so much of the stove cooking right now, it sounds like.
It's been hot here too, yeah, as little as possible.
So what do you love to do most on the grill?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I mean, these days I do just about everything on the grill. Last night I made enchiladas.
Enchiladas on the grill?
Yeah, instead of putting them in the oven, I put them in a cast iron skillet. I sauce them, I cheese them, and I put the whole skillet right on the grill.
Wow.
And they pick up a little smoke and, you know, the cheese melts. And they're not on there very long. They're only on there for maybe 15 minutes.
Okay. Well, that's a new one. I haven't heard that one before. What was in your enchiladas?
Actually, zucchini and rice and beans. And then on top, I made a Mexican salsa, basically, but blended. And the base of the salsa was actually a homemade barbecue sauce that I added chilies to and some cumin to give it those south of the border flavors.
Ah, Well, we got to talk about barbecue sauce. I know you sent us one recipe, but this is something people are very particular about. People like their specific recipes for barbecue sauce. What is yours?
people get really territorial,
right,
about barbecue
sauce. Like with chili, right?
Exactly, yeah. And barbecue in general, you know, it's very regional. I grew up in a part of the country that is not a barbecue capital. You know, I grew up in eastern Pennsylvania. So I feel like I can make my own decisions about barbecue sauce without prejudice. my favorite kind is tomato-based. It's sort of like a Kansas City style. And going one step beyond that, I like barbecue sauces that are ketchup-based because you hit all those flavor components that ketchup brings to the table, you know, the salty, the sweet, the bitter, the sour, and even the umami, which Heinz in particular is sort of famous for.
Ah, umami. Heinz ketchup? Umami? Really?
Yeah. This was an article written by Malcolm Gladwell in The New Yorker some years ago. I think it was called The Ketchup Conundrum or something clever like that. And he talks about how Heinz's formula for ketchup hits each flavor taste receptacle perfectly. So it's essentially like a perfect, well-rounded tasting food, which is quite rare. You know, I mean, most things are more salty than they are sweet or more sour than they are bitter. But Heinz ketchup, apparently, according to Malcolm Gladwell, who's, you know, pretty smart when it comes to research, hits all those flavor profiles equally and perfectly. And I love the stuff. I mean,
yeah.
The only reason I get French fries is to this is a vehicle for ketchup. So, you know, I use it as a base to my barbecue sauce.
So in other words, when the French disparage us for dousing everything in ketchup, we can come back with, but it's the perfect umami flavored food.
Exactly. And I've got nothing against mayonnaise, but, you know, I'll take ketchup on my fries any day.
Yeah. Well, there is a Facebook message here from Glenn that I want to read, who says, there are many reasons why I'm glad I was raised in Oklahoma, but the most important is that I grew up halfway between Kansas City and Texas. Instead of arguing which was best, we stole the best of both and made a better secret barbecue sauce. Sweet with a kick, even makes bologna taste gourmet. And he was looking at your recipe on our Facebook page, says it looks full of flavor, but he has no idea what demi-glace is and will probably substitute a cup of cherry Dr. Pepper.
That's great. Well, there's so much that I like about that response. First of all, that it sounds like he feels like I feel, that he can make his own decisions about barbecue sauce without prejudice. You know, he can take the best of all worlds. And I love that idea. Secondly, let's talk about what demi-glace is. Demi-glace is a veal stock that's reduced down with some wine to become this incredibly intensely flavored sauce. And it's used in French cooking, and it finishes a lot of sauces, and it's very deep, deep flavor profile. So that's what demi-glace is. I add some to my barbecue sauce because it hits those base notes of flavor. You don't need to do that. If you want to use beef broth instead, you could, or you could just skip it altogether. And I sort of love his suggestion of cherry Dr. Pepper.
Have you ever heard of that? Can you do it for demi-glace?
I've never heard of it, but why not? I mean, cherry Dr. Pepper sounds like it's a chemical formula that's made to taste delicious. You know, why wouldn't you take advantage of that? Sure, yeah, if you love the stuff, put it in your barbecue sauce.
I want to know how that tastes. Someone's got to try that and let us know. Ian, next time you're on, you should try it.
I will. You know what? Because I bet it doesn't taste bad. I bet it tastes good. So, you know, if it tastes good, why not do that?
Yeah, you can't
there's
go
no
too
reason
wrong.
To be a snob about things.
Well, in terms of sweet things that you could eat in the summer, I don't know. I'm really excited about fruit right now. There's nectarines that are coming out that are gorgeous, and strawberries and cherry season. What are you doing with your fruit?
Oh, I had a peach the other day that made me think that I had died and gone to heaven. This thing was just, I mean, literally it was dripping down my arm and I couldn't suck the juices out fast enough. I was like a peach vampire. It was just so good.
In a way, you don't need to do anything right now, do you?
The thing. I mean, if you have a perfect piece of fruit, just eat it. And the thing about perfect fruit is that it only comes once a year. Like, I won't find that peach in December. I just won't find it. So I'm not going to waste my time on peaches in December. But now that they're here, You know, I'm buying them faster than I can eat them. Literally, there's a pick-your-own orchard a mile and a half away from my place. And I went there and came back with like a bushel of peaches because I couldn't help myself. And what started to happen is they started to go bad. I couldn't eat them fast enough. So last week I made a peach cobbler. And this is a fun recipe. This is one of my grandmother's recipes. And she called it magic peach cobbler. This one's also in the book. And the fun thing about this is that you don't mix the batter up completely. You start out by melting some butter in the pan that you're going to bake in. Hmm. You just throw the whole thing with the stick of butter in the oven, then you take it out when it's melted. You whisk together the rest of the batter, so flour and sugar and a little baking powder and some milk, very simple stuff, and then you pour that over the butter. You don't mix it together.
Hmm.
And then on top of that, you just slice peaches. So, you know, you take three or four peaches or something and you slice them over top. What happens as this thing – then you throw it in the oven. Sprinkle it with some sugar, throw it in the oven. What happens as it bakes is that the butter comes up around that dough and sort of fries it from the outside. So you get sort of a crispy crust from the butter. The baking powder puffs up and activates. And as the batter rises and puffs up and bakes, it – comes up around the peaches that you've put on top. So the peaches get sucked down into the batter. And then, you know, half an hour, 40 minutes later, you take this thing out of the oven and there's a layer of peach on the bottom and some peaches on top. And it's quite pretty because it's sort of a mosaic of peach, basically.
And
so it's
amazing.
A really fun, like, uber simple recipe.
So you don't have to flip it over. It's not like an upside down cake.
Exactly. Yeah. You just scoop it out when it's done and you have these layers of fruit and cake. It's a fun recipe and really fun to cook with kids too because there is something sort of magical about it.
And you're legally required to put ice cream on it, right?
Absolutely. Yes. State law.
Well, we're talking this hour with Ian Knauer, who is the author of the cookbook The Farm. He's also a contributor and former test kitchen cook at Gourmet Magazine, and he blogs at BigCityCountryBoy.com. And by the way, we'll be posting a bunch of these recipes on our Facebook page at The Veronica Rickard Show. And we want to know what it is you're cooking this summer, what your favorite summertime meals are, and maybe if you've got some grilling inspiration for us or questions about ingredients. Ian is the go-to guy this hour. Our number is 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234, or you can send your email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Veronica Rickert, and it's the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Veronica Rickert, back with you here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio as we get inspired about summer cooking and all the fabulous stuff that's coming up in the gardens with our guest Ian Knauer, who is a contributor and former test kitchen cook at Gourmet Magazine, and he blogs at BigCityCountryBoy.com. He's got a cookbook out. It's called The Farm. And we'll take our first phone call now. We've got Monica joining us from Greenfield. Hi, Monica.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I am enjoying the show, and I just wanted to say I really liked the idea of putting the corn on the grill with the husk. That's actually the way that I grew, that I ate corn when I was growing up in Mexico. We would soak the corn and then throw it in the grill, and everybody would peel it at the table, and it was just delicious.
Ah, so you soak it first. Is that part of your plan too, Ian?
You know, I don't soak it, and I think I'm going to start soaking it. Thank you for that suggestion, because I always, you know, I always put some corn on the hot part of the grill, and it chars a little bit. So that obviously is the way to go.
Monica, what do you top your corn with, Monica?
I actually, in Mexico, we top it with mayonnaise.
Mayonnaise,
a little bit of butter, but that's not as crucial. But mayonnaise and Parmesan cheese, grater. Parmesan cheese, and it's delicious. And if you're really greedy, you can cut it all and put it on a cup, and then you put the mayonnaise and the Parmesan cheese on it rather than on the cup, and it's delicious.
That sounds great. And I like it. If you're greedy, you get to cut it off the cob. I love that idea.
Thank you for the show.
Oh, thanks for calling. That's fun. Mayonnaise and Parmesan. I never would have thought of that. That's a great idea.
I've had it that way.
Have you?
I have to say, it is delicious. It's really good. You know, I feel like maybe this is one place where ketchup doesn't belong, is on corn on the cob.
Yeah, I guess so.
But mayonnaise is a great way to go. I've had it that way. I've made it that way. And I like to put a little chili powder on there and some chopped cilantro, too.
Yeah, this is good because my corn routine is getting a little tired. I'm glad to get this fresh inspiration. So you said cilantro, we've got mayo, we've got Parmesan. What else did you say? Chili pepper?
Yeah, a little dried chili flakes, and even a squeeze of lime juice just to balance out the richness of the mayonnaise and the cheese.
Oh, yeah, that would be good, too. All right, well, thank you so much, Monica. Those are fun ideas. Jerry is joining us next from La Crosse. Hi, Jerry.
Hi there.
Hey, go ahead.
I have another little takeoff on Monica's. I soak my corn, but then I peel the husk back, remove the silk, put olive oil, salt, and pepper, put the husk back, and then cook it. You don't have to add anything later.
Ah, yeah, that's another good one. Have you heard of that?
Jerry is serious when it comes to corn preparation. he is really taking the time and taking good care of his guests. I'm not so sure that I like the people that I'm feeding enough to to do that for them. But hopefully one day I'll get to eat Jerry's corn when he makes it.
And yeah, taking the silk out is the pesky part, isn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, Jerry. That sounds good. That's worth a try. Maybe
that
just
does
for
sound
yourself
really good.
When you're cooking for yourself sometime.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Corn on the cob for one.
All right. Lynn is joining us next from Eau Claire. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, Veronica and Ian. Good morning.
Hi.
My suggestion is, well, I broke my hand this spring and I wasn't able to process the whole 50 pounds of strawberries my husband brought to me. You can only make so much jam.
Yeah.
But you can preserve fruit in alcohol. And I do make, and I have before, I made strawberry liqueur, and I made watermelon brandy. I flavored it.
Wow.
I fill a gallon, glass jar with my fruit, cover it, let it macerate for a couple of weeks, and then I make a really, really thick, simple sugar syrup. And I also like to split a vanilla bean, put it in there, because it just vanilla seems to me just to round out everything. And it's not for children, but it's for when they go to bed and you're sitting on the deck or near the hot tub, and it's really tasty.
Well, that sounds great.
I want to come to happy hour at your house. That sounds like a lot of fun and delicious. Actually, this is something that I've done too, and I love that idea. It's a great way to preserve the flavor of fruit. And I do it with wine berries. I don't know if you've heard of these things, but they're a wild raspberry that sort of they grow along the roadsides, and they're out this time of year. They have a sort of a crunchy seediness to them. They look like rubies. And I go out once a year and I pick about a quart of them and I pour vodka over them and let them sit for a month. That is a really fun way to enjoy seasonal fruit.
Wineberries. I've never heard of those. I wonder if we have them in Wisconsin or not.
I bet you do. Originally, this plant was brought from Asia to breed with domesticated raspberries. And honest to God, like, oops, we dropped it out of the window of the lab. Mistake happened. And one of these berries got loose, and they're an invasive species, and they sort of take over the woodland. But the advantage is that they're delicious. So if you see these bright raspberry-looking like things on the side of the road, they're out this week where I am. They shine like rubies, honest to God. You know, pick one, look it up on the internet to make sure that you're not poisoning yourself, and then pop it in your mouth, and they're really delicious.
You know, I wish huckleberries were an invasive species. That is one berry. I had never had it. I think I got to about, I was maybe 28, 29 when I had my first huckleberry, and wow, those are some good berries.
I've had huckleberries too. They are really good. They're tart, which I really like about them. And I feel like the balance between sweet and tart is something that I really like in fruit. You know, I'll go for a Granny Smith apple over a Red Delicious apple for that reason.
Oh, really? Yeah. Well, lots of different things with apples for sure. But I'm happy not to have another apple until October now.
Until October.
Right.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. All right, let's go to Paul. Paul joins us in Watertown. Hi, Paul.
Hello. How are you guys?
Doing well. How are you?
Good.
Good. I heard about the corn. I got stuck on the corn, and I had to tell you guys about what else to do with the corn.
Yeah.
I cook it. I'll put it in the microwave in the husk. and it steams it in the microwave. Just put the, I peel off maybe the outer layers of the husk.
Uh-huh.
Now, and then it stays moist, and then you serve it like that. But then what you do is you peel back the husk, leave it on the cob, and that husk is a moist, clean, wet nap to wipe your barbecue sauce off with. I'm
right.
telling you, it's perfect.
You're multitasking with your corn.
That's right. Save the paper, and you use that corn husk because it's just like a wet nap.
Well, how long do you pop it in the microwave for?
Just for, you know, maybe 5 minutes, four pieces for 5 minutes, and that's it's done.
Oh, that sounds simple.
It's really simple.
That'd be good on a hot day. So.
Oh, yeah.
Sure
that's
would
right.
be.
And then you can wipe off that that honey-glazed barbecue sauce.
Nice. All right. Thank you, Paul. Do you do
I
much?
Love that idea. It's sort of like nose-to-tail eating where you're using every part of the animal. You're using every part of the corn.
Do you do much with the microwave, Ian?
I don't, no. I have one that I inherited with the place that I live, you know, with my house. And I use it to heat up coffee after I've forgotten about my cup of coffee and it's gone cold. That's pretty much all I use it for. I just never really got into microwave cooking.
Yeah, I remember when microwaves came out and there were all these cookbooks and they made it look fantastic. And then it turned out there were only about five things you could do in a microwave.
Right. Well, now we know that steaming corn is another
steaming
one of those
corn.
Things.
Steaming corn, now there are six things.
Six things, right.
All right. Let's see. Megan joins us from Waupaca next. Hi, Megan.
Hi, and I missed part of your show, so maybe you talked about this. It's another corn idea. I don't know if anybody mentioned just standing it on end in a pot and steaming it.
Ah.
Like an inch and a half of water maximum, and I can fit, I think, 13 ears in my big corn pot. You could use a canner, and it never touches the water. Just that skinny little end is in there. So if you need to hold it, it retains its flavor. And if you want to do another dozen ears, you take those out, and you've got the water, and it just comes to a boil really quickly and steams it.
Oh, so that's for feeding a crowd.
Well,
with corn.
Hey, when I cook corn, we eat a lot of corn. It's so good when it's in season. But it just works great, and the flavor is incredible, and you don't have to deal with the husks. That's all done then.
Do you like that better than grilling the flavor when you do it that way?
You know, I like grilled corn, but I hate, like, when I have a crowd to have all that black stuff from the grill on my hands and everything. I don't like the mess. It tastes great, but, you know, if I have a crowd, I kind of, it's a little neater this way.
Yeah, well, that's fantastic.
And the flavor's great.
Okay, that's another one I've never heard of.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Thanks a lot, Megan.
Thank you. Yeah, this is a technique that actually my mother cooks corn this way. She peels it all, takes the silk off, and stands it on end. And instead of water, she uses milk, which
milk.
I'm not sure makes any difference whatsoever because you're steaming. And so you're not really getting the flavor of the milk. You're getting, you know, cooking by steam.
Yeah, you're not going to change your mind, though.
Exactly. But it's great, you know, and she does it for the same reason, to cook a lot of corn at the same time and only have to use one pot. It's a great technique for cooking corn.
So since we're talking about all this corn preparation, are there any other simple recipes that we can use for all this corn we're making?
You know, it depends on the corn. Corn is one of those things where if it's like that peach that I was talking about earlier. If it's right off the stalk, if it's fresh, if it's perfect, you know, perfectly ripe, you don't even need to cook it. I've had corn that is so sweet before it starts to get starchy that I just cut it right off the cob. I toss it with a little vinegar, a little olive oil, some herbs, and I serve it as a raw corn salad. It's one of those recipes where people take one bite and their eyebrows rise because it can be such a delicious thing. The only problem is that you need really fresh corn. You know, as soon as you take it off the stalk, the sugars in the corn start to turn into starches. So the longer it's away from its stalk, the more you're going to want to cook it.
Do you grow corn in your own garden?
I do, yes.
So you're able to do that, yeah.
Yeah, right.
Well, we've got a lot of farmers markets here, but yeah, that's good to know to get to it right away.
Exactly.
All right, another call. Dave is joining us from O'Connell. Hey, Dave.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing good.
You
how about you?
You were talking about Dr. Pepper before and that cherry Dr. Pepper.
Yeah.
Well, I marinate my ribs in Dr. Pepper for at least a day, then I cook them slow. And it brings out a nice sweetness and a whole mess of different flavors.
Do you put anything else in the Dr. Pepper?
Nope, I just marinate them. Then when I take the ribs out of the Dr. Pepper, I like to put some jalapenos on it and put them in tin foil and put them in the oven or on the barbecue
Wow.
for a couple hours. It comes all nice. Your meat is nice and sweet. It's got a whole different flavor.
My gosh, Dr. Pepper.
So, yep. Dave, does it taste like Dr. Pepper in the end, or does it sort of morph into its own special thing?
It kind of works into its own, like a sugary, a sweet taste. But I do that. I've been doing that for years with Dr. Pepper or Coke.
But not cherry Dr. Pepper.
Yep, I did cherry too. It just brings in a whole new flavor.
I'm totally going to try this. I feel like this is a thing, and I need to experience it.
Yeah, for sure.
I like to marinate for like 12 hours, but if I can marinate overnight, that's better yet.
Wow. Okay, at least 12 hours, maybe overnight, and then cook it low and slow.
All right. Yep. Well, thank you, Dave. I have to say, all this talk about Dr. Pepper is making me crave a Dr. Pepper, which I haven't had in about 12 years.
There's a time for everything.
There is. I think that time is now. All right, Dave. Thank you. Alan in Cottage Grove. Hi, Alan.
Hi. Oh, I just wanted to call and say enjoying the show. And I've been having fun this summer making grain-based salads, things with quinoa, farro, couscous.
I think I sampled some of these salads, right, Alan?
Yes, you have.
Thanks for calling.
Oh, thanks. And I wanted to say, when you're looking at a hot kitchen in the summer, what I tend to do is cook a lot of the hot stuff all at once, get the burners off, and then chill it. And so it makes for, you can have all kinds of things that you can cook, but I do it all in a concentrated time frame. And that way, everything gets like cooking beets, and then we chill beets, and you can make them with vinegar, oil, or whatever you want. And that helps, too, cooking.
And that gets the pain over right away of the heat. For the organized cook, for those of us like me, you kind of have to suffer the heat.
You have to organize it so that it gets done, put some fans on to blow the heat out. But things like couscous will cook in 5 minutes, so they don't heat up the kitchen. Mm. So
yeah, it's a good idea. All right. Well, thank you, Alan. And what about some of the grains? You know, Alan was talking about grains, and I know he's cooked with farro.
I am right on board with Alan. I love grain salads in the summer. And like he mentioned, you boil them ahead of time, you chill them down, and then you toss them with a simple vinaigrette and, you know, maybe some vegetables and some herbs. And those grains suck up that vinaigrette. They suck up all that flavor and they keep chilled in the fridge. And they're the sort of thing that, you know, you can have them for lunch or for dinner. And then the leftovers are even better. I agree. I love farro. I love wheat berries, spelt, quinoa, which he mentioned, just to name a few. In fact, I love to make why can't I think of it? That the Middle Eastern parsley salad is on the tip of my tongue.
Tabbouleh?
Tabbouleh, thank you. I love to make tabbouleh with quinoa instead of bulgur because it gives it a fluffier texture.
Well, thank you so much for the call, Alan. We are talking about summer food this hour and getting some inspiration for corn, Dr. Pepper, lots of other things, and finding out your recipes for marinating meat, and want to know what else it is you're eating, what other vegetables you're looking forward to, and special things that maybe you cook only in the summertime that you look forward to all winter here in Wisconsin. Let us know at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234, and our email is talk@wpr.org. As we talk with Ian Knauer, who is a cookbook author and a contributor to Gourmet Magazine, his cookbook is called The Farm. I'm Veronica Rickert, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Softly fading. Break to your crib, change your clothes once more, because you're invited to a barbecue to start at 4. Sitting with your friends, y'all reminisce about the days growing up and the first person you kiss. Veronica Rickert with you today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio as we talk about barbecues, grilling, and summer food with our guest Ian Knauer. He is a blogger. His blog is Big City Country Boy and a former test kitchen cook at Gourmet Magazine. His cookbook is called The Farm. And Ian Knauer, we're listening to the song here about barbecuing. Is that what you reminisce about when you're grilling the first person you kissed?
I usually reminisce about dancing to Will Smith when I was, 14 on the beach.
Oh, that works too.
Getting jiggy with it.
Yeah. So in terms of summer food, and grilling out. So one quintessential food that we haven't touched on is the grilling of hamburgers. What do you do to make a tasty summer hamburger on the grill?
Well, the secret to a delicious hamburger is salt. You need to get some salt into that meat when you're mixing it together. Otherwise, it just tastes like anonymous meat patty. You need to season it. And I feel like that is the one thing, if you do nothing else, that will make the difference between a regular old hamburger and a great hamburger.
Salt?
Salt.
That's it?
Yeah. That's it.
That's all you got?
You can do so many other things, too. I mean, one of the things that I love to do is grind up some bacon in the food processor and mix that into the mix. I do that especially with my turkey burgers because it adds some fat. Turkey's quite lean. I also like to put diced onion in there because it gives it a nice crunch within the burger.
But what about the moisture factor? That's a new one. What about the oyster factor? What about the moisture factor? You don't want that dry anonymous meat patty. So you've got your salt, you've got your onions, whatever else you put in there. How do you keep it from drying out?
Well, the thing to look for is a higher proportion of fat. I don't like to buy beef that is super lean. For me, that sort of ruins the point of a burger. If I'm going to eat a hamburger, I want it to be fatty and delicious and juicy. You know, I don't want to waste my time on something that's dry. So if you're going to do it right. In fact, in the past, I've ground my own meat. And this is a really great way to change up the texture and the flavor of your burger. So instead of just getting chuck, get a cut of meat that's got more flavor to it. Get a skirt steak and grind that, and you will be amazed at the difference of flavor in the burger. It tastes really meaty.
Well, that's interesting. Okay, so different cut of meat. And do the onions moisturize it at all?
I'm not entirely convinced that they add moisture, but they do add a nice crunch and obviously the flavor.
And what about toppings? That's kind of the fun part.
That is the fun part. I have to say I'm sort of a purist when it comes to hamburgers. I do like mayonnaise on my burger. I like ketchup and lettuce, tomato, and onion, raw onion. So if my ideal hamburger is that. It's sort of like a California burger. But that said, I've had some pretty incredible burgers with blue cheese and caramelized onions. Pickled jalapenos are not anything that I would ever kick out of bed. I love pickled jalapenos. So it's a fun way to get a little creative when you're barbecuing.
Now, what about vegetarians? If you don't want to go for that piece of red meat, do you have any veggie burgers that you like to make?
I've made veggie burgers in the past. I think they're, the best versions that I've had are quite good. But if I were a vegetarian, and I'm not, but if I were, I don't think I would gravitate toward food that resembles meat products. So I wouldn't go for like tofu hot dogs or veggie burgers.
I love tofu hot dogs.
Do you?
I do.
I don't know if I've ever had one.
They're not bad. Okay, there's some pretty good brands out there now.
Well, maybe they're delicious. Okay, so that's great.
Especially in Dr. Pepper.
Right, yeah. You marinate them for 12 hours in Dr. Pepper.
With oysters.
Right.
No, they're really tasty.
You know what I do love to do, though, which is vegetarian friendly and, in fact, just food friendly? I love to treat vegetables like they're a piece of meat on the grill. So I like to cut them in big pieces. So I'll take a zucchini and I'll cut it in half lengthwise and grill that. And I actually call it zucchini steaks. So I grill that. I get some nice smoke flavor in there. And then I top it with an extremely flavorful sauce. One that I've been doing recently is sort of a fun take on a chimichurri sauce. And a chimichurri is a parsley, vinegar, chili sauce from South America. It's usually served on steak. And the version that I do is a fresh take. So instead of dried chilies, I take red bell peppers and I grill them and then I slice them up so they're roasted. I mix in some cilantro and a whole bunch of parsley, some lime juice, and some olive oil. And so I mix all that together and then I top the zucchini steaks with that sort of fresh chimichurri sauce.
Oh, yeah, that does sound delicious. Well, we'll have to see if we can get that recipe up as well. It sounds pretty simple, though.
It's very simple, but yes, I'll be sure to send it to you.
Okay, and another phone call here. Katie is joining us from Duluth. Hi, Katie.
Hi, Monica. Thank you. Hi, Ian.
Hi.
I called. You were kind of hitting on a lot of things while I was waiting. You were talking about grilling burgers. We grill meatloaf and lay bacon under it to keep it from sticking to the grill. You could also just take the meatloaf and make it into patties and circle it with the bacon to keep it moist and to create some smoking and flames. And I also had called about grilling zucchinis. So often with the really large zucchinis, people think you need to bake with them and such, and they go with smaller zucchinis on kebabs. We actually like the big zucchini. We slice it extra fat. We will take an olive oil with basil and garlic and salt and pepper and brush it on it and put it flat on the grill and flip it. And we had that just the other night with the grilled meatloaf. We also do whole chickens. We raise our own, and it's a pretty presentation, the whole chicken, instead of always just pieces mounded on a platter. And they inevitably always turn out very crispy golden brown, different than from the oven. And we put them in the cast iron pan, and I usually will kosher salt them and leave them in the fridge 24 to 48 hours. Because that will help even more the golden color and crispiness, and just some water in the wrought iron pan. And people pay extra to get smoked turkeys at Thanksgiving. It takes on very pink meat from the smoke coming up on the grill. And those are things we really like to do. Another thing was stuffed avocado. I've been doing that a lot as a cocktail or a salad, where I take the half of an avocado, either stuff it with a tuna salad really dressed up with roasted red peppers and capers and things. Or the other night we just put a green tomato salsa in it, and I used it as a cocktail with shrimp tails sticking out from it. And I dressed the small plates with all different kinds of greens, whether it's watercress or butter lettuce.
Wow, you guys really eat well. Those are some fantastic ideas.
Yeah, so stuffed avocados, avocados are at their cheapest in the summer, and they're not a very cheap thing any other time of the year. And it's something different than a Mexican form in, you know, Mexican dishes. It just stands by itself, stuffed, and it's dressed with, like, green olives and all green things around it on whatever choice of lettuce. I will oftentimes cut a very small slit on the rounded back end of the skin so it lays real flat, you know, and it's not rockering.
So, Katie, can I go back to your chicken for a moment on the grill?
Uh-huh.
How long does it take you to grill a whole chicken?
It's an hour and a half. Today, we just took one off the grill. It's a smaller chicken, so that took an hour, but it's typically an hour and a half. We have the bottom holes open all the way, and we just have ever so slight, like less than eighth of the hole on top open, so it builds the proper heat that it needs. And then I always make sure there's water in the cast iron pan. I might open up once or twice to add water or check on how it's doing. But I used to put the olive oil in and then the water, but you don't even need that. It doesn't stick for anything. It just, if my husband pulls the big heavy cast iron off the grill. And then we take two forks, put it on a platter, and it's so pretty, the presentation, instead of just pieces of chicken coming off the grill.
So I've never heard of that, Ian, a whole chicken on the grill. Have you done that?
I have. Katie is clearly an advanced cook.
I picked up on that.
She has some incredible ideas. A meatloaf burger is a phenomenal idea. But the chicken, and what she mentioned about salting the chicken, is also a great way to add flavor. And she's right. It makes the skin crispier because it dries it out. So you get an extra crispy skin, you get a more flavorful bird if you rub it down with kosher salt and, you know, the night before, let it sort of do its thing. The flavor gets in there. I actually like to speed up my chicken grilling time by cutting the backbone out of the bird and flattening the bird. So instead of an hour, hour and a half, it'll take more like 45 minutes. That technique is called spatchcocking, which sounds like a dirty word, but isn't. And so if you don't have the patience that someone like Katie has, and you're more like me and you just want to get dinner in your belly, cut that backbone out and speed up your cooking time. But definitely salt the chicken a day ahead. It makes a huge difference in flavor.
Wow. Okay, thanks, Katie. Lots of amazing ideas there. And you know, speaking of grilling whole animals, Ian, I know that you have a picture of a giant whole pig roast in your cookbook. You've also
this
done
is some, this is something that my family does every year. Yes, we roast a pig. And you mentioned groundhogs, yes.
Which I hope is only an occasional occurrence.
It is only an occasional occurrence. But, you know, those little pesky guys, they eat all my lettuce.
But they're so cute.
They are cute. And the thing is, the first time I shot a groundhog, I felt so bad because it was just the cutest thing. And I felt terrible wasting it. I was a teenager. I took it home and I made my mother cook it for dinner.
Wow. So wait a minute. There's a lineage of cooking groundhog.
There's a lineage of cooking groundhog, yes.
All right. Well, I'm not going to ask you for your groundhog recipe. Instead, I'm going to talk to Mike in New London. Hi, Mike.
Hi, how you doing?
Doing good. How are you?
Great. So listen, I've got a no excuses for your guests to be able to remove the silk from the sweet corn. An easy method. I found it on YouTube with a guy by the name of Ken. And what he does is he does steam it in the microwave, but you could steam it any way you want in the husk. And when he gets done, he takes and puts it on a cutting board, and he cuts the stalk end off, so the bottom of the ear, if you will. And then he grabs the top, and he just gives it a shake, and the cob falls right out of the husk, and there's no silk on it whatsoever.
No kidding.
Huh. Yeah, works pretty cool.
I'm going to try that.
Yeah, it's on YouTube. Just, you know, Google the or search the sweet corn silk removal, and old Kenny is right there with his demonstration.
Mike, is that how you do it?
I tried it a couple times. It works real well.
Nice. All right.
And I do have one other question. On your breaks, you guys don't happen to be drinking that fermented watermelon, do you?
I wish we were. Yeah.
Happy Friday.
Nice.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, enjoy your summer.
All right, thanks a lot, Mike. And as long as we're on this corn subject, Scott emailed in to say, creamy peanut butter on corn on the cob is wonderful. The salt and sugar combines, and it's delicious. Try it, I swear. I don't know, peanut butter. I can go with the Dr. Pepper. I was barely getting by on that. But now, peanut butter on corn. What do you
Why
think?
Not? Why not? You know, I'll give anything a try once.
Yeah.
If maybe next time I have corn, I'll smear some Jif on it or something and give it a shot with
corn. Yeah, I'm just trying to process it. I guess you just smear it on and take a bite.
Yeah, I would imagine.
All right. Well, that's another recipe we want from you next time. We want some
peanut
incorporation of Dr. Pepper and peanut butter and corn. If you can make all of those ingredients taste good, you win. Well, leave us with one or two more recipes that are simple that maybe we can try out this summer without too much bother.
Well, while we're on the subject of grilling, I mean, we talked about grilled pizza, which is definitely a winner. Everybody loves that. You can get creative with the toppings. You don't have to do zucchini, like I mentioned, or just a straight ahead marinara. You can really sort of have fun. You know, if you happen to have a garden, you have zucchini blossoms. They're great on there. You throw them on at the last minute. I make a fresh chili sauce, like a hot sauce that I put on just about everything. Now, this is really simple. You have to like spicy food, which I do. But you take some chili peppers, any kind you want, mix and match them together. Chop them finely and mix them with a little bit of vinegar, apple cider vinegar, a little bit of salt, and a little bit of brown sugar. And then just let that sit as long as possible.
Sounds delicious.
It's really good. It's, you know, it's spicy, but in some way it's sort of refreshing. It adds a nice hit of acid to whatever you put it on.
And but I
put
you it could on use peppers that weren't as hot, right?
Sure, of course, yeah. I mean, this actually works really well with bell peppers, too, especially if you roast them. So, you know, roast your bell peppers. Do it on the grill so you get a little smoky flavor. Peel them and then finally cut them into fine strips. Toss them with that mixture of vinegar, salt, and a little bit of brown sugar. And it really makes a wonderful topping for anything that's on the grill that they take off the grill. From meat, you know, you could put it on your tofu hot dogs and even your Dr. Pepper ribs.
Well, there you go. So that sounds really delicious. So how long do you let it sit there for? We want to put this up on our webpage.
Honestly, I made some last summer, and it's been in the fridge since, so it's a year old.
Oh.
It changes in flavor, and because it's in a vinegar mixture, a vinegar-salt mixture, it's basically preserved as long as you keep it in the refrigerator.
Now, you mentioned your pizza, and I know you have a recipe in your book for grilled BLT pizza.
Yeah, so this is a fun pizza. And, you know, talk about ways to get creative with pizza. So I like to mix up some cheddar cheese, a little bit of sour cream, and some bacon in the food processor.
Ooh.
I put that on the pizza dough. That's basically the sauce. So that's the B part, the bacon. And then after the pie comes out of the oven or off the grill, whichever way you want to cook it, I sprinkle it with halved cherry tomatoes and some fresh arugula. So you have the bacon, the lettuce, and the tomato. So it's a BLT pizza. And it's another one of those pizzas that because of the subtleness of the bacon and the, you know, it's intriguing because it's an unusual sauce. Everybody loves this pizza. And it's quite pretty, too.
Yeah, that sounds delicious. And I like it because BLTs are one of my first go-to foods once the summer gets hot. So it's kind of taking an old summertime favorite and giving it a twist.
Right, yeah. I'm going to sort of modernize it a little bit.
Wow. Well, I am so inspired, Ian. Thank you so much. I've got so much to cook this weekend. I'm going to start with a pizza, I think. Not the groundhog,
I'm excited
the pizza.
Too. Right.
Well, thank you for joining us, and we'll talk to you next time, I hope.
My pleasure.
Ian Knauer is a contributor and former test kitchen cook at Gourmet Magazine, and he blogs at bigcitycountryboy.com, and he recently published a cookbook called The Farm. Thanks to Marika Suval for producing this program, and thanks to Rhonda Fanning, who did technical direction. I'm Veronica Rickert, and you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.